Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, I'm looking at probably a dozen different headlines, and you know there's more where that came from. There is so much going on in our state capitol in Helena right now. Is what are we on, day or week three of the legislative session? So many things happening, so many bills that are being worked on right now. There's no way I could try to summarize it myself here on this show. But that's why it's so great we get a chance to catch up with legislative leadership and legislative leaders from both parties now here every Thursday for our weekly update, because, you know, we can talk about some of the things that are standing out in the headlines, but leadership typically knows what's actually moving and what ain't moving. Well, let's kick it off here. Great to have Montana Senate President Matt Regeer out of Kalispell with us from the Capitol. Mr. President, good to have you back on the show. What's the big story this week?
Hey, good morning, Eric. Good morning, Montana. Great day to be a Montanan for sure. We got things rocking and rolling here in the Senate. We're hearing right now Senate Judiciary is hearing House Bill 121, which is just protecting women's spaces there in bathrooms across government buildings across the state. So I know that's a vibrant hearing that's going on right now. We heard on Tuesday we had Senate Bill 161. That was sponsored by Senator Fuller out of Kalispell, and that had putting in the criminal endangerment code. Kids under 16 can't get the puberty blockers or transition irreversible surgeries. So that was a very voluminous hearing, too, as you can imagine. So a lot of things moving and rolling. We got education. I'll hype that again. I know I talked about that last time. We got the Educational Choice Rally coming up this Friday. Expecting busloads of people to come down and put parents and kids first in our education system. I'm going to have pizza and a rally here at the Capitol, so come on out, Montana, if you're close to Helena.
Yeah, school choice rally at noon tomorrow. Our friend Henry Kriegel with Americans for Prosperity Montana was telling us about that one, and I know Jeff Lasloff, he's been promoting that as well with the Montana Family Foundation. Wow, House Bill 121, that already passed the state house. That's the bill to protect women in their safe spaces in the midst of this radical transgender push that really got massively rejected in the last election. So that could be, you know, with 30 seconds to go before our first break here, I could see that really being a unifying measure for Senate Republicans. There's been so much focus on some of the divisions, but this seems like something that could be an easy unifier for the Senate Republicans.
Yeah, I'd sure hope so. I mean, it's something that Montana as well as America, and you see Europe now reversing course too on just how detrimental that is to force this thing on our young children. So, yeah, I believe we're going to have strong support from Republicans.
What about the border? What about the illegal aliens? I know there's a few bills on that front. We'll talk about that and more. And speaking of the, well, not the coyotes in this instance, the coyotes on our southern border, but what about the wolves as well? There's a few wolf bills that are floating around the Capitol. So that and more coming up right after this. Everywhere.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, I'll save the update on the wolf bills dealing with wolves. I'll save that for maybe the next segment, because that's the action taking place in the state house side. But right now we're talking with State Senate President Matt Regeer. Let's talk business. Let's talk environmental issues and some of the environmental extremism that we've seen in this country. I did see that at the federal level, Lee Zeldin has now been confirmed to head up the EPA. So that should be good news for our miners in Butte, our miners and our power plant workers in Colstrip, and the rest of us to have some common sense there at the EPA level. But you guys are working to address some common sense with regard to MEPA, the Montana Environmental Policy Act, as I understand it.
Yeah, we are. We had the held case. And side note, it's good to see Trump just rocking and rolling on, even before day one. So there's going to be a lot of ramifications, I think, from the federal level on how that plays out with the states. The feds really are intertwined with a lot of things that we do here at the state, especially with all the federal dollars that we take in here in Montana. So just a side note, good to see Trump starting to shake things up there at the deep state. But we did have held case here in Montana. I know all you guys out there in Montana have probably heard about this, especially if you're listening to Aaron Flint. So that was a really egregious hearing. It really, a judge acted as the House, the Senate, and the governor all in one swoop there with the held decision, and the Supreme Court backed it up. And so we've got that opinion from the Supreme Court, and just how do we deal with that without stopping business? I mean, it could be a business killer here, as far as especially natural resources, but even development. How do you put in climate change into a consideration for a development that's coming? So we're trying to craft some laws that allows the business climate here in Montana to still go on. Our Senator Galt has a bill here, Senate Bill 221. I think it's coming up this next week that will define that climate review and how it works. We're kind of making the best of a held decision there, an egregious held decision, and let Montana businesses still move forward. So excited to see how that one goes and see the opponents and how they justify that. So
yeah, another topic on that. Another topic that we've covered here pretty significantly is judicial reform. We had Senate Majority Leader Tom McGilvery join us for a full hour before the session kicked off. And one of the interesting topics there is this chancery court. It would basically be like a business court to where, okay, we know our courts are backlogged, et cetera. So, hey, let's take these business cases, and just like we have a water court to specially deal with water issues, let's have a business court to specially deal with business issues and provide some certainty and stability on that front. You were telling me that's actually moving forward right later today.
Yep. That is, I think moving forward, I think it's today or coming up this week. What is it? Thursday. These days all go together, but, either day or tomorrow. And it is really, good for business. It also takes out, constitutionality, decisions and puts it in there. So that's the big one of it. But kind of a side note is that they do take on business. Right now in the district courts, if you have a child abuse and neglect, case that drops in brand new, that gets bumped to the top of the docket, and rightfully so. I mean, we're dealing with our kids, but all then the business cases are just always put off and put off and put off, to where it takes years to get a adjudication on a business dispute, and that really slows things up. Wyoming has done this, and it's really great for business across the state to have its own little separate court. So excited about that. For sure. We also, on the judicial reform, we've been hearing those on the House floor too. And it's interesting to hear the arguments back and forth on now the Democrats all standing up to try and save their last political stock. I mean, they really politicized the judicial branch, which is unfortunate. It's not the way that branch should be. And just even a bill that has parity between legislature and the judicial, they're pressing back on. An example of that is Senate Bill 40 that Senator Hertz out of Colson had, that it judges you. Right now, as legislators, we have to have open meetings. We have open meeting laws, and you got to sit in on committees. You can, if you have a quorum, you can come in. The press can come in. It's all open and transparent here in the legislature, but it's not with the judges. And so his bill just made that parity across the board. And it's interesting to hear those in opposition trying to defend just having the same open and transparent courts as we do in the legislature. So a lot of things like that. I think we're moving the needle and making government better and more transparent.
President Trump, obviously, we're already seeing a massive decline in border crossings by illegal aliens, and it's so great to see these illegal aliens being deported on a daily basis. What do you think the legislature can do here, with about a minute to go before we wrap up before the break, to help support those efforts?
Yeah, I think there's a lot we can do. And one, I know Representative Braxton Mitchell out of Flathead there has a bill for E-Verify, just to have, hey, you can't hire illegals. Let's get the business community in on this too. Right now it's voluntary if you're on E-Verify. But let's stop attracting them that way, even from the business angle. So it's a great bill on that. I think there's a lot of things states can do here to back up Trump and his efforts to, against illegals.
All right.
So excited to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there's some interesting driver's license bills that are apparently being debated, I think, over on the House side as well. So I can maybe fill our listeners in on that front. I had a great phone call from Representative Jerry Schillinger out of Circle earlier this morning. Senate President Matt Regeer, always appreciate you joining us for our weekly legislative update. Thanks for freeing up your very important time. Very helpful to give our listeners a quick take on what all's happening with so much to talk about. All right, quick break, back after this.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I was just chatting with Senate President Matt Regeer during the break offline there, and I like this idea. You know, part of the reason why we do this weekly update, and it's great to get a chance to hear from leadership in both parties, is there's so much going on in Helena, and it's a fast-moving 90-day session this is just a great way to get folks across Montana up to speed with what's going on, because there's so much that's taking place. But, you know, we're also trying to be cognizant of your time. There's other issues people are going to want to call in and talk about. So we've been doing these shorter segments, but at some point, man, we'll have to have, you know, both Senate President Regeer from the Republicans and House Minority Whip Jonathan Carlin from the Democrats. Maybe both of them can join us for the full hour, or one of them joins us one day, one joins another day, especially as we really start getting closer to that transmittal deadline and things are really starting to get across the finish line. That'd be fun. And then, because really, you know, President Regeer, he wants to take your phone calls as well. And it's harder to do that with a short segment. So it'll be fun to get them on for a longer amount of time so we can take more of your phone calls as part of these conversations as well. But let's now go to our weekly legislative update with the Democrat side of the aisle. We've got Representative Jonathan Carlin, the House Minority Whip out of Missoula. Great to have you back on the program. From your side of the aisle, what are you guys focused on this week? Anything that might get across the finish line?
Hey, Aaron, thanks for having me on. Yes, it's been a busy week already. We had one of our tax bills that actually we talked about last time I was on, our property tax credit, actually passed out of House Tax Committee yesterday on a strong bipartisan vote. So we're excited about that, and we've also introduced a few housing bills that are getting scheduled for hearings. One of them will provide more protections for folks living in mobile home parks. And we've also got bills to help kind of private partnership to keep rents reasonable. So we've got lots of stuff moving.
Yeah, the housing issues in particular, that's one of those issues where you can see some interesting dynamics at play where there's not oftentimes necessarily the party line votes. I think was it Representative Danny Tenenbaum out of Missoula who partnered up with some of the Republicans on some of the housing reforms in the last session, if I remember right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that was back in 2021. And then last session, there was a bipartisan land use and planning bill that helped work with cities and counties to provide kind of a framework for long-range zoning reforms. And that's something that I think has been really positive, both in you know, places like Missoula and in some of our more rural areas.
Medicaid expansion, I know, is a big priority for the Democrat caucus. And even some of the more rural Republicans, you know, they're hearing from their rural health care facilities on this topic. Kayla Spaler had a report, two Republican Medicaid expansion bills advance. One from the Democrats is tabled. I think she ended up tabling her own bill. Would your caucus, would any of the legislative Democrats support a work requirement being a part of Medicaid expansion renewal at all? And if so, why or why not?
Yeah, so work requirements are already in law currently. The federal government has basically nixed those work requirements. And so that's why the bill that passed the House committee simply lifts the sunset on Medicaid. And so that's something that, you know, we're supportive of maintaining current law. There's changes that we want to make to kind of cut some of the bureaucracy around it. But in terms of work requirements, that's already in law.
Well, but of course, it was vacated by past administrations. But what if Donald Trump comes back in and says, "No, we're going to have work requirements as a part of Medicaid expansion again"? Again, we had a former legislator, Tom Burnett, on yesterday, and he said he's also encouraging them to have a work requirement that says that, hey, if a court throws out the work requirement, then that will throw out Medicaid expansion altogether.
Well, you know, Aaron, at least what my concern is with some of these work requirements is we also see people in Medicaid that are caring for a sick child or a sick relative, and we see people with lots of situations where maybe they can't work full time because, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of people, and I have constituents that have an elderly or, you know, parent with a disease, a kid that's sick, and so I think what we want to make sure is that, of course, we want anybody that's receiving any sort of, you know, benefit of any type to be productive. But the thing is that we also, I don't want to see constituents that are end up not being eligible for Medicaid because, you know, they're a caretaker, for example.
Big picture, I saw there was a poll that came out, and I think even there was even one of the Democrat commentators on the Montana Politics hashtag had shared this as well, that Democrats in general, their favorability is underwater by 26 points, while President Trump enjoys a net positive rating. Obviously, you know, we've talked about the election results of November of 2024 before, but, you know, nationally now you're seeing some Democrats, they might have opposed the Lake and Riley Act before, but now they voted for it, right? So talking about, you know, illegal aliens and border security. Another big topic in the 2024 elections was, you know, protecting women's sports, protecting women's safe spaces. It seems like, based off of what I'm seeing out of the legislature thus far, that even though the voters clearly rejected, you know, efforts to allow men into women's sports or into their bathrooms, that the Montana Democrat caucus in the legislature is standing firm against those efforts to protect women's sports and protect women's safe spaces. Could you see some Democrats break from their party on that topic?
You know, I'll tell you what the Democrats are unified on is that we should be legislating to lower property taxes, invest in housing, fund our schools. And I don't think that we need to be legislating toilets. I think that we trust that Montanans can live their lives, go to the bathroom, participate in sports in a way that makes sense. Like, I think that we don't want to see legislation. We don't feel the need to legislate every aspect of people's lives and their personal lives. Our constituents sent us here, pave the roads, fund schools, cut taxes.
Well, I would slightly agree with you there because we never needed to have a law that would say men don't go into women's bathrooms. Men don't change and undress in a woman's locker room in front of a female college student. Men don't take away girls' sports opportunities because we have Title IX to protect women's sports. We never needed those laws because it was just common sense that that wouldn't happen. And somebody would call the cops if a man tried to do that. But now that whole concept is being upended. And even as the people of Montana reject that very notion, it seems like Democrats are still, you know, in lockstep standing up for that radical transgender agenda.
Well, Aaron, I want to make something really clear. The Democrats are not bringing any bills related to the Republicans have dozens of bills that they're bringing related to transgender stuff. What I will say is when it comes to things like bathrooms and everything, you know, I'm every school, every institution, businesses can have their own policies, can do what works for them and their clients and the people that they serve. And I think that we trust that folks know which bathroom to use and that whether it's a school or a business, that they can, you know, manage their spaces appropriately and that we don't need to pass laws about toilets.
A couple.
I think a lot of this is common sense. I mean, most of my constituents are pretty clear on which bathroom to use.
Well, so you have no problem with people saying keep men or biological males in particular, regardless of whatever drugs they're taking or whatever surgeries they've done, biological men should not be going in to women's bathrooms.
Well, if we're passing laws about toilets, I think we also have to think about enforcement. I mean, are we going to be, like, how are we even going to enforce something like this? I think what we have to have is some trust in our constituents and in our business owners and our school administrators that they are going to, that, you know, that people can use the appropriate bathroom. And I think what's hard is we can pass any law, but there's no enforcement mechanism. I mean, unless we're going to be doing chromosome checks or something in order to use the toilet.
Well, I think we've already seen how that's a non-issue, and that common sense definitely applies, that these, you know, all of these places can pass a simple policy. But we've only got a couple more minutes left. Some other bills. I know there's been some bills covering wolves and the hunting of wolves. Sometimes that can be a bipartisan topic. I mean, clearly we've got way too many wolves in our region. Why not allow the number to increase when it comes to hunting?
So we have a Fish and Game Commission that's appointed by the governor, and their job is to make those regulations. So, I mean, I think where I'm at is I've got a wildlife biology degree. I'm not anti-hunting by any means, but I don't think we should be setting what the Fish and Game Commission should be doing, which is listening to the science. They travel the state to hear from Montanans, and then we're going to be putting these numbers in statute, completely undermining their authority. And so I'd like to keep the authority with the governor-appointed commission.
So what do you think, especially given your degree in wildlife biology? Do we have enough grizzlies out there? Do we have enough wolves out there? Or if somebody from the federal government calls you to get your take on it, what would you tell them? Yeah, there's enough. Get them off the endangered list when it comes to grizzlies. There's enough wolves. Let them hunt more.
I mean, when it comes to grizzlies, I think, of course, with any species on the endangered species list, we want to get that species off the endangered species list. When it comes to wolves, I mean, wolf hunting is allowed. I think in terms of the exact number, you know, I'm not looking at all that data in front of me, but I trust that the Fish and Game Commission and the biologists can come up with regulations that allow for sustainable hunting and can keep these species off the endangered species list. And that's what I'm really hesitant for. I mean, the legislature only meets every 2 years. A lot can change in 2 years. We have droughts, we have fires, we've got big changes. And I'd rather see that power vested with the commission, which, again, is appointed by the governor. And I trust that process.
All right. Well, Representative Jonathan Carlin, House Minority Whip in the Montana House. Got about 20 seconds more to go. Anything else you want to tell folks across Montana?
Been getting a lot of outreach, emails, comments from the public on bills, and it is incredibly helpful to get that. So I just encourage the public to hold your lawmakers accountable.
All right, Representative Carlin, great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us for our weekly update. And like I said to President Regeer as well, if there's a week where you're saying, hey, let's free up the full hour, we can take phone calls and more. So if there's ever a time, or if that fits your schedule, let us know, because we can always turn the short segment into a full hour segment, mixing some phone calls as well, especially as we get closer to the transmittal deadline. All right, back after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
Looking again out to Washington, D.C., as the U.S. Senate continues to hold confirmation hearings and confirmation votes on President Trump's newly formed cabinet. Well, yesterday, the U.S. Senate confirmed former New York Republican Representative Lee Zeldin as the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator in a 56-42 vote. During confirmation hearings, Zeldin faced scrutiny over his ties to the oil industry and its potential impact on renewable fuels policy. Biofuel groups welcomed his commitment to working with them, with leaders from the Renewable Fuels Association, Growth Energy, and others expressing optimism about his support for ethanol, E15 expansion, and the renewable fuel standard. Livestock groups like the National Cattlemen's Beef Association congratulated Zeldin on his confirmation, stating that cattle producers look forward to an EPA that recognizes their conservation efforts and to curb overreaching government regulations. However, environmental groups remain skeptical, with the Center for Biological Diversity warning that Zeldin's leadership should be closely monitored to ensure environmental protections remain intact. In other news, retail fertilizer prices rose slightly for the fifth straight week, with six fertilizers higher and two down. The two fertilizers that were lower included MAP coming in at $809 a ton, with potash priced at $443 a ton. I'm Lane Northland.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Hey, we've got a pretty packed agenda here this morning on the show. We may have a caller on the line right now. I can try to sneak that caller in real fast before we get to our next guest, if you want there, Caden. We'll get reaction here. On, we just got a legislative update from the Republican Senate president in the state Senate, and then the Democrat House Minority Whip. So it's fun here on from both sides here this morning. Lots of stuff we could talk about here. Before we run out of time, I might try to play a little bit of the back and forth between Montana's Senator Steve Daines and RFK Jr. Senator Daines was there for the confirmation hearing yesterday. I mentioned it on the air. He really wanted to get RFK Jr.'s commitment on the record that agriculture will have a seat at the table in the Department of Health and Human Services under RFK's leadership. So I've got that audio. Can maybe play a little bit of that back and forth for you here in a few minutes. But yeah, before we get to a couple of great guests joining us in studio, let's go to John in Kalispell. Hey, John, your reaction to the legislative updates that we just had.
First of all, I love your show, Aaron, and when I can, I'll listen to it all the time. However, Representative Jonathan Carlin talks about talking to his constituents. While he's president of the Montana Landlords Association and trying to discuss his bills going after mobile home park owners and putting onerous regulation upon them from the body of the legislature in a pre-contract between two parties, he's literally trying to move all disputes going from court into the Montana Department of Commerce. He's proposed in his bills, House Bill 305, that there's a $5,000 fine to a mobile home park owner, and he is absolutely insane when he is going after these mobile home park owners where there's really not an issue except the cost of rent.
They're not standing up for private property rights is what you're saying. They're not working with. Yeah. Very interesting. Well, thanks for calling in. And we'll have more open phones time tomorrow on the show. But I'm glad we were at least able to sneak in, get some quick reaction to the legislative updates that we had here. Appreciate the phone call. Of course, John Sinrud, former state legislator out of the Gallatin Valley back in the day himself. So thanks so much for the call. All right, this is a really cool deal here. This came across our desk got a week or two ago, and thanks to our producer, Caden Bjornsted, for getting this one on the calendar. It's called The Worthy Ranch. The Worthy Ranch, stepping in to fill a void in care for women who are human trafficking and abuse survivors. After care. Apparently, they ran a pilot program last summer, then now they're expanding in 2025 to provide continual treatment, including equine therapy, which is pretty cool. We've got the founder of the Worthy Ranch, Heather Estes, in the house with us here, along with Catherine Conan, who is the executive director for the Gianforte Family Foundation. And great to have both of you here in studio with us. Heather, let's start with you. Yeah, Heather, let's start with you as the founder of the Worthy Ranch. How did the whole thing get started?
It's a great question, Aaron. Actually, I've been working with survivors of human trafficking abuse for about 7 years and wanted to build this ranch someplace where there's four seasons. Most of my work was done in Las Vegas, so grew up in the desert, very hot, and had horses there, then moved to California for my son's school, but really wanted to find a place that, one, that needed the services, but also would be open to welcoming the Worthy Ranch, too. And so one of the first women that I coached, and she wasn't even a survivor of human trafficking, but coached her through this program that we have called the Worthiness Formula, she asked me if I'd ever thought about this ranch, building this ranch in Montana, because she was from Billings, Montana. And she, her mom started sending me property 7 years ago. And of course, I'm kicking myself thinking I should have brought property 7 years ago.
Yeah, aren't we all? I rented a house in Bozeman about 8 years ago, and I was like, why couldn't we have? Well, I know why I couldn't afford to buy it then. But man, if I would have, holy cow, yeah. Well, you know, when I think of the Worthy Ranch, mm-hmm. the 80s, 90s kid comes out, yeah. and I just think of Wayne's World. We're not worthy.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not worthy. But in all seriousness, though, I would assume, like, the name The Worthy Ranch kind of comes from this place of a lot of people who've been battered, who've been abused. They start to feel this lack of worth, and you have to remind them that they are worthy.
Yes, that's exactly how it came to fruition. It was my own journey. I worked in Las Vegas at a shelter for survivors of domestic violence, and I connected really well with the women that were there. I have my own. I'm a survivor of domestic violence and sexual abuse as a child. So I connected with them, and I saw this common denominator of lack of self-worth. And so on my own journey of developing what it means to be worthy, where that comes from, how do I get back to believing that about myself, and then how do I share that with other people? So I created a curriculum based on that, and my journalistic, curiosity led me to build a program, a curriculum called the Worthiness Formula. And it actually helps people specifically who have suffered trauma. And I think there's a lot of people who have suffered trauma, but specifically that's complex trauma. So they are challenged with understanding this belief system. And it's not that they are not worthy. Like, you know, me and Catherine aren't comparing diaper brands when we're born and saying, I'm got Pampers, you got Huggies. No, we ask for something, we cry, we get it, we want it. And as we go through life, we have trauma, we have parents, we have religion, we have culture that changes our belief about self. And so how do we get back to believing that we're worthy? And that's what this teaches.
Very interesting. Catherine Conan with the Gianforte Family Foundation. I've joked about this on the show before. I could throw a football from, and I'm not being Uncle Rico here, but I could throw a football from the top floor of the DoubleTree Hotel in downtown Billings and hit several organizations that are doing incredible things for our mm-hmm. community, like CLDI and other places like this. And they're doing it with support from the Gianforte Family mm-hmm. Foundation. I know you've been a part of their foundation for a number of years now. How did you get involved here with the Worthy Ranch, or first hear about it?
Yeah, we've been working with the Worthy Ranch for, I think, 2 years now.
Yeah, almost three.
We provided our second grant. So, as you know, the Gianforte Family Foundation, and you know this, Aaron, we've been around for over 20 years, right? We've given away over $130 million. I don't know if you knew that part.
I knew it was a lot. Yeah,
it is a lot. Last year, we gave away over $11.3 million, 94% of which was in Montana. So Montana is obviously our focus. It's where our heart is. And we want to see people thrive. And so we're always looking for and being approached by organizations in this state that are trying to help people heal, and a lot of it goes down to getting back to the family structure and strengthening just the roots of families in general. But trafficking is another area where people are struggling and suffering and need healing. And so when we learn about groups like the Worthy Ranch that don't just work to kind of put a band-aid on something, but really want to get to the root of the problem, you know, how again, they're not, the Worthy Ranch itself isn't necessarily going out and looking for traffickers. That's not their focus. But we do support other groups that do that type of work in Montana. But what the Worthy Ranch is doing is helping survivors see, like Heather said, that they can heal, that some things won't ever go away, but that they can heal and they can thrive. And so when we see that opportunity to support groups like that, we jump on it.
Yeah. You and I were kind of talking off air, too. There's a newly appointed and voted in a member of the Billings City Council, and she works with an outfit called Love and Sunshine,
which is another,
just a really cool group. What they do is if there's young women who, get pregnant mm-hmm. and they don't want to have an abortion, they want another alternative. and they want to support life, and they don't just help them through that process, but then they provide a house if they need housing and a place to stay. And so kind of cool to see that somebody with that type of a background is now going to be in a leadership position on the city council. So should see some good things out
That's
of there.
That's cool. And so, actually, Aaron, so Heather knows about Love and Sunshine too. She works with a lot of the nonprofits that we work with in Billings where there's overlap.
That's right. Yeah, because some of those women could have been in an abusive situation or something. And human trafficking, I think you had some numbers here, is human trafficking, we know it's a big problem in Montana, just like the drug cartels. You wouldn't think that's a Montana problem, but it is because of the interstate corridors. We've got a lot of problem with human trafficking and then drugs and drug cartels. Apparently, the cases reported by the State Department of Justice jumped from just 7 in 2015 to 143 human trafficking cases in 2023, just the ones we know about.
Well, and that, I mean, there's a lot that surrounds that stat, and including the awareness of human trafficking and also the organizations that are supporting it. So, plus we have now FBI agents that are actually working on human trafficking. We collaborate very closely with the Yellowstone Human Trafficking Task Force. And so they work closely with FBI and the other government agencies to help, create awareness, prosecute all the things that happen around trafficking.
Yeah, well, good stuff. I love the fact that you're integrating equine therapy into the mix as well. We love our horses here in Montana. Hold that thought. Quick break. Back after this.
Yo. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So I want to try to sneak in at least one soundbite here from Senator Daines and his back and forth with RFK Jr. during the confirmation hearing yesterday. But first, Catherine Conan with the Gianforte Family Foundation. Your foundation is supporting the Worthy Ranch here. What would you say when encouraging others to support their efforts? Because I understand it, they're working to acquire the land and the property and everything right now as we speak.
Yeah, they have some excellent projects going. I would say if people are interested in supporting Worthy Ranch or really any other organization around the state that is working to combat trafficking and help the survivors, just reach out to Heather. She's lovely and she's so easy to talk to, and she'll be able to answer any questions you have. But I did want to point out, Aaron, I think that it's important and people understand January's Trafficking Awareness Month. It's wrapping up. It's not just the organizations that are directly working with trafficking victims that you think about. You know, Worthy Ranch, you've got her campaign, Lifeguard Group, and Exploitation Montana. There's a lot of organizations that are specifically addressing trafficking, either prevention or helping survivors. But you also are seeing other nonprofits like rescue missions and pregnancy centers that are encountering women who have been trafficked. And so it's kind of everywhere. And it's something that you'll find a lot of nonprofits are having more experience in, trying to get more training in how to identify and how to help.
No, that's a great point of how every organization is impacted by human trafficking or drugs or whatever. I mean, we've seen, unfortunately, at our southern border, how some so-called nonprofits are funding the problems that are undermining America right now. These are the nonprofits that are actually helping, where your money's actually going to help, not to create more of a problem, which unfortunately some nonprofits do. So Heather Estes, the Worthy Ranch, what do you want to tell folks? And then, I just think it's cool you're doing equine therapy. I did a Horses Spirits Healing Veterans Program.
I was a volunteer there.
It was so cool.
I've did my own journey of, recovering and healing from my own abuse. I had a horse, and even though it wasn't officially equine therapy, that's when I knew there was this this special magic and healing that happened, and I wanted survivors to experience that. With horses, it's, trust, and for survivors, that's one of the things that goes really quickly is their trust in humankind. And so how do we begin to build that trust? And horses are a great pathway to do that. And so we're excited to do that. If people want to help, definitely reach out. We have a website, theworthyranch.org. Leadership, if you know about land, that we have three pieces pieces of land right now that we're looking at, but we're always open to suggestions for that. Leadership, we're looking for leaders that want to serve on committees right now and help us. But we have we're doing a survivor alumni retreat with the A&B Foundation, which is the Arthur M. Blank Foundation out of Immigrant Prairie area.
Yeah.
They're hosting a retreat for survivors right before the 4th of July weekend. So we need people to help support those survivors that are attending. So support the cost of their travel and because all of those facilities donate, but we need to feed them, we need them, get them there, and we need to provide programs.
Okay? Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you.
TheWorthyRanch.org, if you want to get a hold of them and be a part of all that they're doing. Catherine Conan, thanks to you as well. Appreciate both of you joining us and getting us on our radar.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right. Yeah, it's got the name Ranch in there, so that immediately catches your attention. Here in Montana. Speaking of ranch land, speaking of farmers and ranchers, Senator Steve Daines, here's part of the back and forth with him and RFK Jr. during that confirmation hearing yesterday.
We produce some of the highest quality crops, the best livestock in the country and the world. Our farmers and our ranchers are truly some of the most effective environmental stewards in ensuring we have a safe food supply chain in the world. I share your view that protecting the integrity and safety of our food supply is of utmost importance. I appreciate the research happening in places like Montana State University to help farmers produce resilient, healthy, and safe crops, as well as their agricultural practices. You mentioned you were a 4-H kid growing up. I think our 4-H kids and our FFA kids are some of the best kids in America. My question for you, Mr. Kennedy, is if confirmed, as I'm listening to my farmers and ranchers talk about the future, will you commit to working collaboratively with partners at USDA, at the relevant federal agencies, as well as our Montana farmers and ranchers, before implementing any policy that might affect or impact food supply?
Absolutely. We'll make that commitment. I have, as I shared with you, a personal commitment and a long career working with farmers. I want to make sure I understand the very, very narrow margins, the slim margins that American farmers and ranchers are dealing with. And I don't want, under my watch, a single farmer to have to leave his farm for economic reasons or for regulatory or bureaucratic reasons while I serve, if I'm privileged to serve.
All right, yeah, so that was part of the back and forth. The full back and forth is on YouTube. Let me see what else. Oh, there was also a really interesting back and forth between RFK Jr. and Elizabeth Warren. By the way, did you guys know Elizabeth Warren, while shilling for the pharmaceutical industry, her campaign has raked in $5.2 million from Big Pharma. So keep that in mind when you see her virtue signaling. Also, check out our Montana Talks podcast later today. Got incredible insight from retired Lieutenant Colonel and Army helicopter pilot Darren Gobb. We got his take on the tragedy in our nation's capital, the collision with the Black Hawk and the airplane there. That full audio with Darren Gobb will be on our Montana Talks podcast later.